Hello and welcome to the Game Week 27 edition of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
I think the best place to start before we get into previewing this week's matches is to talk about Crystal Palace losing Wilfred Zaha. I mean, that's their best player. The wingers suffered his second knee injury of the season. He sprained a knee ligament in the draw with Newcastle. And he's facing a potential absence until game week 32. Chuck, do you think Palace are going to be able to cope, or I guess for that matter, stay up with Zaha missing that much time?
Considering the fact that they're getting Mamadou Sakho returning to health, I do think that they'll have enough to stay up. It's just going to be real interesting to see where the goals actually come from without Zaha.
Yeah, so looking at Palace's current team sheet, I mean, I have a couple thoughts on where they would tinker to get some more offense. I don't know how conventional it would be, or really how much it'll affect them overall. I mean, Patrick Van Aanholt stands out just because he's a winger, the wing back for that matter, who can get forward. He has a couple goals in him, but he's still not that great. Is there anyone else on Palace you think is going to have to are going to be able to step up?
Well, when I wrote on this the other day, it was basically either Patrick Van Aanholt moves up, James McArthur possibly slides to the wing, or you see their new striker, Slorith, something like that. Like,
yeah, he's got this. He's got the
weird Norwegian last name.
Yeah. He's got the O with a line through it, which I'm not really sure how you pronounce that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If anyone would like to tell us, feel free. But yeah, those were really the most likely things that I expected, because Palace is probably going to keep more of a strict 4-4-2 without Zaha, and that's just going to mean that a lot more of their creation is going to have to fall on Andros Townsend and Christian Benteke.
Yeah, and it doesn't help matters that after they face Everton this weekend, they have Spurs, United, and Chelsea.
Yeah, so like the fair thing is, these aren't games they were expected to win with Zaha.
Yeah, but I would think without Zaha for that stretch, I mean, they get Huddersfield before they play Liverpool in game week 32. I think for them to realistically be confident going into the final stretch of the season, they're going to need at least one win and one. I don't know if I can see them getting two draws, but they need at least one. They need to essentially beat Huddersfield or Everton and then draw the other match.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tight. The thing they have going for them is the fact that they're at least in 14th right now. 1 point above Southampton. And like, while their goal differential isn't great, it's still better than most of the teams below them in the table.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, if you look at it, you have Stoke City have been in flux, but they look like they're on the rebound. But then obviously Huddersfield, West Brom, they're both struggling. And then Southampton has looked good of late, so I mean, it's going to be a real nervy patch for them. But speaking of another team that appears to have hit a rough patch in this season, what's up with Chelsea?
Honestly, I don't have the slightest clue. Like, it's really tough how a team can go from just rolling over teams in a clinical nature to giving up 7 goals to teams that are not very good in the Premier League in quick succession. And really, at the end of the Watford game, like, the Chelsea defense just laid down and let Watford run over them.
Yeah, I mean, we have all these rumors swirling about what's going to happen with Conte. Is he going to leave? Is he the problem? And while I think there's a clear disconnect between him and the squad right now. I mean,
there's a bigger disconnect between him and the board right now.
Yeah, there's that too. But I mean, it comes down to just, it sounds silly, but just effort from the players. I understand that you're down a man, but there's no reason why they should have conceded four goals.
No, especially considering, like, on a more than one of the goals, like, basically, Rudinger and David Luiz just like, well, we're just gonna let Watford just walk right on through.
Yeah, and I mean, the saving grace, I guess, is that they still have Eden Hazard. But I think the bigger issue is that while Morata hasn't been great of late, there's a clear lack of connection in the final third without him on the pitch, even though he's proven that he's not very good at scoring with his feet lately.
Yeah, but it's just like Eden Hazard is really good, but he's not going to score you four goals alone.
Yeah, and I mean, they had a lot of things working against them. Obviously, you had Willian coming back from injury, and then you had Pedro go off in the 64th minute. I mean, are you worried from a fantasy perspective about the Chelsea assets right now? And I guess particularly Azpilicueta and Alonso.
Well, I just booted Azpilicueta out of my official FPL team for Bower of Stoke, because there's just no way I can justify owning him at that price range if Chelsea's not keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, I also transferred out Marcus Alonso this week, although I do believe he'll be back. He was rested, as a precautionary. 7.4 for a guy who's not going to guarantee you a clean sheet is not something that's sustainable for me right now, even though they have West Brom at home.
Yeah, like, I'm more comfortable keeping my Chelsea assets in Taga, but in OFPL, I am going without any Chelsea cover and not batting an eye.
Yeah, and things do not get any easier for them after this weekend. They will be traveling to Manchester, back-to-back matches. They will be at United and then at Manchester City. I could easily see them losing both those matches if they look anything like they have of late.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on to two teams that are in form. Spurs and Liverpool played quite the draw over the weekend. 2-2 final. Harry Kane gets his 100th Premier League goal in 141 matches, his 22nd of the season. Victor Wanyama scored a thunder bastard. Mohamed Salah obviously scored a brace. Where do you want to start? I guess we'll start from the Spurs perspective.
Honestly, it's a great point for Spurs that they did not deserve in that game.
Yeah, Liverpool were electric, and you know, it depends upon what replay you saw. I did think that the intent was there on purpose or accidental when VVD kicked Lamella. He sold it well, but from where the linesman was, I think that was a clear penalty. And, I mean, out of all the players in the entire world to give two chances from the spot, Kane's not going to miss that second one.
Yeah.
So I would have been appalled if he had missed that.
Yeah, there's no way that he was going to miss both.
So while the title race is pretty much done and dusted, we have quite the race on our hands for the golden boot.
Even though Salah's close, Kane's not going to surrender that.
Yeah, Kane's got 22 now, and Salah has 21.
And there's also a point where, like, Kane's position and just the amount of chances that he gets is still just going to mean a little more when it comes to the end of the season about staying just far enough ahead of Salah.
Yeah, I mean, I think what might make it rather interesting is Spurs have this gauntlet of fixtures coming up. So you would assume that Kane...
Here's the thing, though. Kane can score against anyone, no matter what they do to stop him. Because we started talking about this gauntlet of fixtures, which Spurs are now in the middle of, and Kane has still scored in all of them. And Harry Kane loves playing against Arsenal.
That's a good point. We'll get to the North London Derby in just a bit. But before we get there, want to take a moment to spotlight a couple players who have been quite the performers of late. I guess we're going to have to start with my boy, JWP, the one, the only James Ward-Prowse. Boy, he's been on fire.
Yeah, we've both been talking about him for a little bit, but I did not expect him to hit the highs of what he's doing right now.
So I came across a little correlation a couple weeks ago as essentially his impact in the final third when he was playing out on the right this season. And he's been leagues better out there just because obviously of his service and his ability to play the ball. And he's now pretty much scored all his goals this season from the right wing. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists, 8 chances created in his last 4 matches. So at the rate of JWP's production right now for the price of 5.1 million, is he someone you're considering for OFPL, or do you think that this is the highest he'll hit this season and his production's going to taper off?
So it's a tough one because as like I do with most midfielders, I like him more in Toga than I do in OFPL. But he is showing that he's doing enough to be relevant in OFPL, especially as a lot of your other budget midfielders, like another guy that I like, Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting, are kind of volatile from week to week.
Yeah, JWP available or is owned in 51% of leagues right now in Taga. The one thing that is kind of drawing my attention for OFPL outside of the price is that he takes set pieces. And if you look at the Saints' upcoming schedule, obviously they have Liverpool this weekend, but then they have Burnley, Stoke, Newcastle, Swansea, West Ham, which is 5 solid matches.
He takes set pieces and he has Jack Steffens there to clean up even the messes from the bad set pieces that he takes.
Yeah, and I mean, well, it's going to be tough for him to sustain this form of production. It does help that they don't really have anyone else doing it for them right now.
Yeah, their midfield is weird. I really don't know how to make a heads or tails of it on a week to week basis. As of right now, he's the hot hand. My biggest issue is you just never know how long that'll last for and who the next guy is going to be.
Speaking of a next man up, one of my other FPL crushes, Lewis Cook. I got on the bandwagon a little too early this season, back in game week 8, talking about how he would be a must-own guy by halfway point of the season. He has, however, started the last 8 matches, and this is mainly relevant for Toga just because he hasn't been scoring or assisting, and he's averaged over those matches 8.4 points per game. I love him this week. What are your thoughts? Do you think I'm overhyping Lewis Cook?
Well, I mean, I not really. Like, he's definitely not someone that you're going to rely on to win you a game week, but he's a guy that can essentially do nothing but gets enough dribbles and tackles to still put up a respectable score. So with him, you're just hoping that like he might get you 8 points a game, but at the rate that Bournemouth's performing right now during their hot streak, he also may get you a magical assist to push him up to 16 or something like that.
Yeah, what I like about him, I've actually added him in 2 12-team leagues for this weekend. The biggest thing is when you're getting 8 to 9 points from a guy and he's not getting goals or assists and he plays in central midfield, I mean, the sky's the limit in terms of ceiling when they have a good matchup. And they have an excellent one from the fantasy perspective against Huddersfield this weekend.
I mean, that's basically what started the love affair with Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, you know, the Palace could really use him right now.
Yes, they could. So could Chelsea. But
yeah, Chelsea could use a lot of things. Before we move on to the match previews, you think Conte gets fired if they... Let's get a good hypothetical. If they lose to... If they lose two out of their next three, do you think he gets canned?
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't have been very surprised if he got canned on Tuesday after losing Monday. So... Yeah, he's on thin ice because it's not just the fact that they're losing. It's that they're the reigning champions and losing like this to mid-table teams. Like, it'd be different if Chelsea was losing these games to, like, Spurs and Liverpool. But losing them to Bournemouth and Watford when you're Chelsea and on such a big stage, especially considering that they're going to get absolutely railed by Barcelona in Champions League. It ain't a good look.
Yeah, that's definitely a situation to monitor. I haven't really paid too much attention to who could get brought in, but definitely something to keep an eye on Twitter. So, Game week 27 is going to hopefully start with a bang with the clash between Tottenham and Arsenal. Chuck, are you confident in your boys going into this must-win match for top four supremacy?
Unfortunately, there is no such thing as confidence in a North London derby. I am basically shitting my pants ahead of this game. Especially after Arsenal's performance against Everton last week. While Everton had quite possibly the worst performance I've ever seen from Everton, the fact that Arsenal was scoring with ease and Aaron Ramsey looked like an absolute monster is not great.
I mean, we know Kane has had that great record against Arsenal lately. He's got 6 goals in his last 6 matches against the Gunners. And Spurs have actually fared rather well against Arsenal in their last 6 matches, 2 wins and 4 draws. Do you think this is going to be... I'm assuming it's going to be an offensive spectacle.
I hope not.
Elsewise?
because if it's an offensive spectacle, that kind of favors Arsenal right now. The thing is there's also the fact that, like, Arsenal's back line and defensive midfield situation is not that good. So Spurs shouldn't have an issue scoring if they don't have to spend the entire match defending. I know Toby Alderweireld returned today in Spurs' FA Cup replay, and obviously Victor Wanyama is back in full force. So I'm hoping that Toby actually starts this game against Arsenal, because I feel much more confident about Spurs stopping Arsenal with Toby in the lineup than with Davinson Sanchez in the lineup, just because there have been way too many points this season, last week versus Liverpool included, where I've wanted to wring Davinson Sanchez's neck because he has made stupid giveaways that have led straight to goals.
Yeah, he kind of trades the occasional mental lapse for his athleticism at the back.
There's also a very good chance that he could get a straight red card in this game, and that ain't good either.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs do come in healthy. Arsenal are a little bit banged up on top of them just... I mean, I'm not putting too much in that game against Everton. Obviously, Arsenal were flying on all cylinders. But I honestly think that with that defensive performance, I could have put together 11 guys to give Everton a run for their money, since Michael Keane and Mangala were playing a fucking freeze tag, running away from each other, trying to hold the back line.
Yeah. I mean, my captain's playing in this game because You best believe I'm captain in Harry Kane against Arsenal, especially at home.
Yeah, I mean, the goal record shows that you don't want to doubt Kane ever or any game week really, because he always scores. I guess before we move on, let me get your score line prediction.
I'm going 2-2, and honestly, I'd be perfectly fine with a draw because a draw is much better for Spurs than it is for Arsenal. Because a Spurs loss in this game would bring Arsenal within 1 point of Spurs in the table and 2 points outside the top four, and keeping Arsenal away from the top four is very important.
Exactly. Moving on to the team. Oh wait, I got to give my prediction first. I'm gonna go with. Gonna go with 1-1.
Yeah.
I think there's gonna be a ton of chances, but at the same time, Peter Cech's due for a big match,
Now he's
and.
not likely playing.
Oh yeah, that's actually a good point. I'm actually gonna go with 2-1 Spurs. I just remember Peter Cech's not playing.
See, the issue is like Cech's been so bad that honestly, I wouldn't be that surprised if Ospina has a better performance than him.
Yeah, well, I think that's gonna be all they need to to get over the top. I don't usually pick Spurs in big games, but and yeah, Peter Cech has been real bad lately,
They
but still, it's Peter
took down
Cech.
your team in a big game.
Yes, that you did. So moving on, before I fire a rebuttal to that, we're going to talk about arguably the best defense in the Premier League right now. They put on a stunning display against Arsenal. To be honest, I actually was thinking about setting up a fund where I can bus kids in and have them watch the highlight of this film so they understand how to defend. Everton are going to be taking on Crystal Palace. That was one of the saddest. I mean,
Good Lord. I
blame the defense, blame who you want. It was just all garbage.
honestly, like, there's not much to like in this game. Like, while you expect Everton to bounce back, Palace's defense isn't actually bad, especially if Sakho's finally ready to start this game. The issue is that I don't think Palace can score without Zaha because the last time that they didn't have him was during their 6-game scoreless streak.
Yeah, unless it's Benteke, I don't really
Well,
see.
the big thing is just the fact that not only did Palace lose Zaha, they also lost Sacco for the season with a fractured ankle. So the only other person on the team that was scoring is also out.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not too versed in Crystal Palace to say, okay, this is what I think they're going to come in and do with this game plan. But I mean, obviously, it's going to be all down to Benteke. He does have four assists and a
They're
goal in
gonna
his
hope for
last five matches.
Milivojevic drawing a penalty and bang it in, and that'll be the only way they get a goal, which somehow happens very often for them.
Yeah. From the Everton side of the ball, is there anyone who caught your attention?
I mean, Michael Keane put in a bad enough performance for me to drop him, so there's that. That's technically catching my attention.
Thinking a bounce back game for Theo.
I hope so. I kind of don't have any forwards, so I'm relying on him.
Yeah, I'm personally, unless Seamus Coleman starts, I really don't want much to do with this game.
I mean, I'm in the unfortunate position where, like, I kind of wish that I had just traded away Theo Walcott after his brace, but kind of have to hold him.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a good run of fixtures coming up, and good thing Theo Walcott's not a defender.
The issue is just I don't know what a good fixture is for Everton anymore. Because, like, on paper, facing Crystal Palace should be a good fixture for them. But considering how they've been performing lately, I've no idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. I use the good and appealing real loosely there. Moving on to the next match, one that's at first I thought would be kind of dull, but I think will actually end up be pretty entertaining. Swansea going to clash with Burnley.
Is this opposite day?
In the battle of the upstart clubs, you have top of the table, 7th placed Burnley, commanding with 36 points against Swansea City, who have slugged their way out of the bottom three. One guy in particular, Gudmundsson-Berg.
I mean, isn't he like the only Burnley attacker worth owning anywhere?
He is excellent, and the thing I don't understand is he's only 77% owned in Togger right now.
Still?
Yeah. I don't get that.
Wow.
I would say 80 to 84%. I could see that, but 77% owned? That's still too low. In terms of injury news, the Clarets are likely going to welcome back Matt Loughton into the starting 11 with Phil Barnsley nursing a muscle strain. So he's someone to consider. He actually made my weekly free agent column today. I like him just because I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I could see a draw, leaning towards probably a goalish draw.
Yeah, this would definitely be my pick for the 0-0 draw of the week.
In terms of defenders on the other side, is there anyone who stands out from Swansea for you?
Honestly, in this game, I'd start anyone on their back line because I just don't really see Burnley actually scoring.
Yeah, you got Fernandez, who got the goal last weekend against Leicester City. He's owned in 10% of leagues. And then
Alfie Mawson. Never expect another goal from Fernandez. But
Alfie Mawson's been good too lately. I mean, you're not going to start him. You're not going to start them and bank on that much offense. But, I mean, if it's going to be a clean sheet, they're probably going to put up in the range of 13 to 15 points. Just because with their baseline, with them averaging 7 to 8 over the last couple of matches.
Yeah, Swansea at home is never a bad shout for a clean sheet.
Another match I could see ending, I mean, I think there will be goals in this one, but at the same time, I could see it going goalless. Stoke City are going to be playing Brighton. Pascal Gross found his form last weekend against West Ham. He had quite the performance, scored a thunderbolt in the second half.
But now he's going to lose it because Brighton sucks playing away.
Your boy Stoke, who do you like this week from the Potters?
Well, the question this week is really, how many Potters am I starting? And actually, in Taga and in FPL, that would be 3. Obviously, as with every week, I like my pair of Butland and Zuma, but Zuma is too expensive for OFPL, so I brought in Bauer to go with Butland there. I have Ndiaye, and I also have Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting in OFPL.
Yeah, I have Choupo-Moting in OFPL, and Bauer's been looking like quite the player lately. He's got 6 chances created, 6 successful crosses, and 10 tackles won.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time until he rolls in with his first assist.
Yeah, I mean, he's been charging up and down the right side of the pitch. At 4.5 million, he seems like probably one of the better lower-priced defenders at this point in the season.
Yeah, no, I would most definitely agree with that statement. As you know from listening to us, I am very heavy on Stoke, and I still, this is not the week to jump off that train.
I normally have a tough time whenever we talk about Brighton, considering I think probably their second best player, Anthony Knockaert, has been in and out of the starting 11 lately. I have Matt Ryan in two leagues, but I actually dropped him this week in favor of Asmir Begovic. Is there anyone who catches your attention? I mean, I guess in the land of streaming players where I exist, Glenn Murray, who's someone who always comes to mind, just because his ownership is so low
But I
and he
never start him
sometimes will
away.
pop up.
The issue with Brighton is I'm really reluctant to start anyone on their team not named Pascal Gross, Matt Ryan, or Shane Duffy away from home.
Yeah, if you look at it, Brighton are actually last in the league in goals for away from home with six, which is one less than West Brom.
Yeah, so about Stoke, start them, play their defenders. You should come out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny with Shaqiri because I feel like he's gotten kind of glossed over lately.
He
And
scored a
I he ha
header, which I can't believe that he actually did that, because that's almost as surprising as Coutinho's header earlier this season.
Yeah, Shaqiri's header, however, would not have been possible if it wasn't for my boy Ndiaye, who, after 2.5 hours of research trying to explain that this guy fills up the stat sheet, did exactly that in his debut. He got nicked a little because he got a yellow card, so
Yeah,
and it ended up
the
with
issue is
four goals
while
and
you
five
were
assists.
doing all of that research, I was picking him up.
Yeah, I was pretty salty about that. You gotta trade him to me now.
Maybe. We'll see about that. Depends on what forwards you have. And in one
Moving
league, I
on.
know the answer is none.
Speaking of forwards, West Ham are going to look to ride the Chicharito train when they play Watford this weekend. He's really been the only sign of life
Isn't
given all their injuries.
there a potential that Arnie comes back this weekend?
Yeah, I mean he's working his way back, and I haven't actually checked his diagnosis for today. What they said originally, he wasn't expected back until the end of February. There was something on WestHam.com talking about how he's rearing to go to get back into matches, but I
For
feel
all we know,
like
this
it's
could be
definitely,
David Moyes fucking with us.
yeah, I feel like it's definitely an outside chance for that one, considering he's only missed two matches and he was supposed to be out for 4 to 5 weeks.
I mean, I wouldn't be super surprised if he at least made the bench, but I wouldn't go into this expecting him to make a serious contribution. Chicharito is weird because David Moyes hates Chicharito, but all Chicharito does is score if you give him good service, which João Mario has been.
Yeah, Mario, he was quiet on his debut. He looked a lot better over the weekend against Brighton, although it was more in the peripheral metrics that didn't really show up in the highlights. He had a couple take-ons. Obviously, he got the assist. The interesting thing with West Ham, and I'm sure David Moyes is pretty pissed about this, but over the last three matches, Chicharito's been in either created or scored all their goals, all three of them.
Yeah, no, because again, Chicharito's actually good if he has service.
So I guess we'll bring the Chicharito talk to a close. Any interest in him for 6.7 in OFBL?
No, because he's too expensive, and there's Colin Wilson, who's just the budget forward that I will be pitching to everyone for right now. But while we're still on West Ham, we can't leave this without discussing the return of Patrice Evra to the Premier League.
Yeah, if you could, you should definitely put the song Return of the Mac in when you said that, or ever returning to the Premier League. Yeah, I mean, he's coming in to pretty much serve as a vastly experienced backup for Aaron Creswell, which we're supposed to assume, and that's what makes sense. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if they come out this weekend and David Moyes has Patrice Evra operating as a number nine. So,
yeah, I have no idea what the hell to expect here. I wasn't even sure that Patrice Evra was allowed to play in the Premier League. So it's real interesting. I obviously would not recommend touching Evra in Taga Leagues or OFPL. So,
yeah, I mean, the only thing I could see happening is if there's a couple of matches before Masuaku comes back from his suspension where Moyes wants to actually play five in the back rather than having the wing backs in there. And he wants to play with just sit the team back because they're really not that good and maybe ever gets a start. But besides that, I mean, I would think it would just be substitute cameos. Well, although I mean,
it's
they are
tough
kind of
because
up.
Before Evra's 7-month ban, it's not like he was actually that good.
Yeah, but the thing is, West Ham really don't have any experienced options outside of
maybe David Moyes just likes his flexibility from being able to get his leg that high to kick a fan.
Yeah, he wanted to bring in his favorite Manchester United player to cancel out having his least favorite. In terms of Watford, obviously they're flying high after their win against Chelsea.
But take that four goals with a major grain of salt.
Yeah, I'm going to do a nice little shameless plug for myself for tipping the shit out of De La Feu last week. 30.5 points in Taga.
Yeah, he was on my bench. That was a great one.
Yeah, he's got a chance to be a premium mid-tier forward too, which essentially means a forward who gets a lot of crosses but doesn't really score a lot of goals, which is pretty much what he is.
I mean, and if you are where we are, you likely need that.
Troy Deeney looks like he's escaped without a ban.
As he deserved, because honestly, him giving the double middle finger to the Chelsea fans is one of the greatest things that I've seen in the Premier League this year.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. I also thought it was hilarious when I wrote a nice little section on why to add Andre Gray and then found out after it that he would not be suspended. So thank you. Shout out my boy Troy Deeney. Before we move on, any other, I guess, fantasy options on the Watford side of the ball that pique your attention?
If Ndong gets his first run out, then I'd be interested in looking at Watford defenders. Otherwise, no.
A game. See, this next one we're going to talk about, everything tells me that to not do it at first. And then when I was looking at it later, I just couldn't help remember that time that Leicester City beat Manchester City 4-2.
Well, also remember the fact that City's going to lose 3 games this year. I think that's probably a pretty fair number to set it at. And like this one, it's weird because everything looking at it is like Leicester should have no business winning this game. And if they were going to win this game, it was going to come via Riyad Mahrez, who will not be playing in this game. But they haven't looked awful without Mahrez.
So I just having covered Leicester, because we got some questions on Twitter about it and what they're going to be doing without Mahrez. And from what I watched in the cup matches, from what I saw over the weekend, from what I read, from what I heard from the Leicester guys, essentially Diabate is not supposed to be a Mahrez replacement. It just so happens that with their best attacking options right now, it makes most sense to play him out on the wing because Kelechi Iheanacho cannot play out there. And rather than what he looked like in the beginning of the season, he actually looked pretty good in the up front with Vardy and kind of tucking in behind him for the majority of the match over the weekend.
I mean, considering how much they spent on Kelechi, they kind of have to figure out how to get him going. And during January, Leicester basically shed every other striker on the roster, so they don't have much of a choice.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a punt, Iheanacho is someone to look at in Tauga, too risky in OFPL, just because we don't really know what's going on with Mahrez. But I mean, an assist, three chances created, and the draw with Swansea. He set up a handful of chances. Diabate actually missed one, and then obviously his assist was a nice deft shot fake, and then he just slipped Vardy through first time for the goal. So, I mean, if he can play like that with the link play, he's going to give City headaches. Plus, there's that nice revenge storyline of having him getting shipped out following the arrival of Gabriel Jesus. So, it should be an entertaining match on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I unfortunately can't tip the revenge game after I was pretty heavy on Theo Walcott versus Arsenal last week.
Well, the difference is Walcott had his good game, and he's not really playing for his future right now, considering if the Mahrez saga gets figured out and Leicester go back to what they were doing before, even if Iheanacho keeps up this form, I could see him potentially not being in the starting 11 anymore.
Issue is like we're getting near the point where I'm slightly concerned that the Mahrez saga may not be figured out. Like with the whispers of the English FA getting involved in this because he's still skipping out on training even after getting fined. It's gonna be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, to keep this podcast short, I'm not going to go too in depth about it, but the possibilities are coming somewhat straightforward. It's he either goes to China, he fools everyone and somehow goes to MLS, he doesn't play for the rest of the season, or he comes back into the team and they have a nice little kumbaya circle and kind of bury the hatchet. But the latter.
Or he could pull a Diego Costa and just skip the country.
Yeah. Well,
Don't forget that one.
yeah. I don't know. It's a real sad situation to see for just having him gone from, being in the outhouse to returning, being a good guy, getting back in form, and then having this happen. Just sucks to see as someone who likes Mahrez. But I mean, in terms of Manchester City, no real tricks this weekend. I mean, Bernardo Silva, obviously he's going to probably be still in the starting 11 with Leroy Sané out.
Hopefully Raheem Sterling's not going to miss another sitter.
Yeah, that was bad. That was not good at all. David Silva, he's got a chance at playing, but we're going to want to wait till later on this week when we get the injury reports before you pencil him into your starting 11. I'm going to go with 2-2.
I don't feel 100% comfortable calling a Leicester win, so I'm going to say 3-2 City, because there will be goals.
Yeah. I mean, I transferred Vardy out this week, and it's not because I didn't want to start him, but it was just to make my team work and be financially flexible for next week. I had to get rid of him, which pains me because I know he's probably going to get at least the goal.
Yeah.
A game that should have a lot of goals in it and none of them scored by Huddersfield Town. Huddersfield Town are going to be hosting Bournemouth. This is the. If you're going to have cherry pie one Sunday morning this season, let it be this Sunday, because Bournemouth's going to run rampant at the. I mean, I like Huddersfield Town, I like David Wagner, but I could see them getting just absolutely clubbed like a baby seal this weekend.
What a great analogy.
Is that like? Can I say that? Is that allowed?
It's already in the recording.
I mean, like. But like I'm trying to like I feel like that term doesn't get used as much, and I feel like it's pretty funny.
Please don't add us, PETA.
But yeah, Huddersfield Town have conceded seven goals in their last three matches. They had a pretty inspiring win over Birmingham at midweek in the FA Cup to secure passage to the fifth round. But unfortunately, I think they might have used all four goals they could have in them for the next 3 weeks in that game.
Yeah, like talk about emptying your clip of bullets way too quickly. Yeah, Huddersfield's been hemorrhaging goals in the Premier League, and Bournemouth's been in fine form, which means that this is probably going to find a way to be a nil-nil draw, but I'm still rolling with all my Bournemouth attackers.
Yeah, something for people playing Toggle out there. Huddersfield during this rough run have been allowing an average of roughly 13 points to opposing central midfielders. Now that is factoring in that Emre Can had a day and a half, so he put up 30 points, but without that, it's still up roughly up around 10. So just to piggyback earlier, that's why I'm hot on Lewis Cook. Is there anyone else from the Cherries that you're liking? I guess we'll stick with Tauge first in terms of guys to stream or guys to add.
I mean, I'd start Begovic, I'd start their defenders, I'd start most of their midfielders, and I'd start Callum Wilson. It's this one
Yeah.
where you're getting the Manchester City syndrome of if they play for this team, they're likely useful this week.
Yeah, Callum Wilson has been in great form lately. He's the guy who I actually brought in for Jamie Vardy. I really think Callum Wilson's going to have a good game, but then again,
Well,
it's Callum
also,
Wilson.
knock knock, Josh King's back.
Yeah, that's confusing.
He's not going to
This
start
is.
over Callum Wilson, but the interesting thing is going to be what does he do to Jordan Ibe and Ryan Fraser?
Yeah, and I mean, you also have the potential of Callum Wilson running them down all game and then King coming in late for Wilson and scoring two goals off the bench.
Yes, which like.
Which.
If King's out there in your Toggle League, you should probably grab him. I wouldn't necessarily recommend starting him unless he starts from the get-go in this game,
Yeah,
but
I mean, their ownership's kind of gone up a bunch lately. King's owned in 70% and Wilson's up to 65. So
how is Wilson only up to 65? Toggle ownership baffles me sometimes.
I mean, I guess the guy I said, obviously, I mean, Ibe, Stanislas, Fraser, Cook, they all look like they're definitely going to start and they're all available in less in available in more than 50% of leagues. So those are the guys I would look at. Same with their defenders. So I mean, this should be a big day for Callum Wilson. He's been putting up the peripheral numbers to indicate that if he gets chances, he'll bury them against the Terriers. So, I mean, as we said, ram it at home, player Cherries this week. A club who I hold dear and true to my heart, we're going to talk about next. Manchester United.
So how
Boys
did
got
you feel
back.
when Paul Pogba was sat last week?
The boys got back on track last week with a 2-0 win. I felt pretty pissed off because I brought him into my OFPL team.
I also had him starting in my OFPL team, and I was pretty disappointed because that was just the nice cherry on top of a shitty OFPL week for me.
So I think in terms of impact moving forward, Pogba's probably going to have a hell of a day against Newcastle. He actually made a couple tackles when he came in off the bench last match, which you don't see too often, even though he is a hell of a tackler
Oh
when he
yeah,
wants to defend.
I'm real interested to see an angry Paul Pogba this week.
I'm definitely in the minority on this one. Would you have any interest in potentially captaining Paul Pogba this week against Newcastle?
I have Harry Kane, so
Okay, Chuck. Well, let's pretend you don't have Harry Kane.
It's tough because I like Pogba in OFPL. I love Pogba and Taga because no matter what he does, he gets a shit ton of points. But I'd still rather captain Sterling or someone from Liverpool.
I mean, just a thought, if you're in a place where you need to make up some differential points, I think it's safe to say I'm going to go with my prediction, one of my specific predictions for the weekend. Paul Pogba is going to get two assists against Newcastle.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very surprising because Newcastle's doing better, but again, an angry Paul Pogba is not something you want to see.
Yeah, it's funny too, because if you look at Pogba's stats, he's got 11 assists in fantasy, and his last three times he's got assists in matches, he's gotten two. So they've come in
Yeah,
bunches.
he never gets one assist.
He's the only guy I've kind of want to give the time to for Newcastle would be Kennedy in Taga, because he's classified as a forward. Which is interesting because he plays on the wing and he came in as a defender. He's averaging like roughly 9.5 points over his last two matches and starting 11. If you were looking for a third forward, is Kennedy someone on your radar? He's available in 30% of leagues right now.
I mean, I'm pretty disappointed that you scooped me to Kennedy, so
Yes, I did.
yeah, because I need a forward. And honestly, I'd take almost any forward with the Pulse right now, even Christian Benteke, who I'm not really a fan of ever owning.
A match that has another forward that I was going to mention, Southampton Liverpool. Now, it's not the Liverpool guys. Guido Carrillo for the Saints. He got his first start. He's a forward who can play with his back to goal. He's great in the air. He won seven aerials. Do you think that having a Route 1 forward in Southampton's lineup is going to A, make him, I guess, viable in fantasy, and then in turn, is he someone you'd be interested in scooping or maybe trading for if you can get a
He's
low offer?
the closest thing I've seen to Charlie Austin with play style wise, since Charlie Austin went down slash got suspended. And that actually worked in Southampton's lineup. Like, having a poacher just does not work because they don't play a pretty enough style that they're really going to be able to get anything over the back shoulder of the defense. But having someone where you could just mash it forward and hope they knock something down and bang it in, it's not too bad to try, especially considering where they are in the table.
Yeah, I scooped him because I was desperate for forwards. I mean, I'm not expecting a ton. If he can give me, anywhere between 6 to 7 points per match, like as a base, I don't even care if he scores. I just need someone in there who's going to give me some stability. I think he's an option. I mean, it's a good for James Ward-Prowse too because he'll have another big guy to target in the box. I mean, Liverpool are going to win this game.
Oh yeah.
Do we need to really talk about them? Because I feel like we just get redundant at this point. If you don't know that,
If Liverpool's good,
you're probably not listening.
Firmino and Salah are obviously potential captain choices. They're gonna win this game. You're gonna hope that you're gonna get something from James Ward-Prowse, even though Jack Steffens has scored in his last three games.
Yeah,
Obviously,
he
I'm buying it,
got two.
stopping now.
He's got two in the league, and I believe one
And a cup game.
in the cup game.
But as with all of these weird trends from defenders, buying that it's done, and against Liverpool, if you're hoping for that goal, you're going to end up with a negative six.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna captain Salah this week. God, I mean. That second goal he scored in the Tottenham game, I mean, just That was just beautiful. The shimmy off the defenders and then the look Lloris in the eye and then chip it in. I mean, you must have been tipped your cap at that.
No, I actually screamed in the bar.
Okay, well, upon reflection, you can appreciate that was a nice goal.
No, because I can never appreciate that when it was against Spurs. Like
I mean, he made.
I'm still angry about the Jamie Vardy chip earlier this year.
I mean, he made the center, the spine of your team, literally empty their bowels into their diapers on that. It was so cool.
And we're done.
All right. Well, good for us. They saved the best match of the week for last. We have Chelsea against West Brom in what normally would have been a match we probably wouldn't have even gone over. This is now should be a hell of a fixture.
So Daniel Sturridge gets a hat trick this week.
Yeah, little Sturridge. We touched on it earlier about the Chelsea assets. Obviously, no worry about Hazard. Hazard's going to do Hazard. Morata, he's expected back, I think, next week.
Yeah, I mean, this week, like in Taga, you're still playing your Chelsea defenders because it's West Brom. But, like, I'm not feeling confident about any of them.
Yeah, I mean, Alonso should be back. As I said earlier, he was rested for precautionary just because he's got a lot of matches with him lately. And that's how Zappa Costa and Victor Moses play out wide.
Yeah, playing two right wing backs when you just signed Emerson makes a lot of sense.
In Conte's defense, Emerson only has 15 minutes of first team football since he came back from injury. I don't know too much about how the injury he was coming back from, but I know he's been, I guess, close to returning to full fitness lately.
But you'd think you'd at least try to get him a half in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you would also think that Chelsea wouldn't have gotten their ass kicked. But yeah, I mean, that is
Yeah,
a little bit of a questionable decision.
conventional wisdom just doesn't seem to be a thing here right now.
Yeah, so I mean, you're gonna tr obviously you're gonna trust you should be able to trust their attackers, especially like Willian. Just with Pedro having left with a knock against Watford, although they do have time to recover before that match. I guess more interesting with West Brom, normally this we would have glazed over them, but is there anyone in particular you think could be worth a cheeky stream?
I mean, I think that Sturridge will get his first goal in this one. The issue is just the fact that there's no way I can pick who would assist it. Slash, it's
Cough, cough,
probably
Chris
going to
Brunt.
be unassisted.
Chris Brunt.
Or no one, because a Chelsea defender is just going to bounce it off their head straight to Daniel Sturridge, is going to knock it into the net.
Yeah, Chris Brunt has put up some pretty nuts statistics lately. If you look at his last six starts, he has shit. He has at least three chances created in four of them. He had five against Stoke, six against Everton, three against Southampton. I mean, I don't think he's going to put up that much, but I could see him putting enough to be worth a punch shout in a 12-team league if you're looking for a final midfielder to round out your squad.
Yeah, no, I've had Brunt a few times this season, but he's just someone that I fully stream and add drop as I please.
Yeah, the nice part about him is he's usually there if you need a midfielder. Moving on, before we wrap up today's episode, we're going to answer some questions. We got a great response. Thanks to everyone who reached out to us on Twitter today. We're going to start with FM Pernas. I have Ozil and Iwobi. Is it smart to start them both in general, not against Spurs, or should I drop Iwobi and try to diversify my team?
Number one, I only believe that diversifying your team is an issue if you're starting multiple players not on top six teams. And considering what the Arsenal attack looked like last week, I'd say start as many Arsenal players as you can.
Yeah, and I mean, in the worst case scenario, you can always hold a Wobi, because just given Arsenal's injury record, someone will get hurt, and he'll see minutes. And then the second part of his question, I guess that we'll loop back in, he said that he has Son, Stanislas, Lucas Moura, and Bernardo Silva are his other midfielders.
Drop Lucas Moura.
Yeah, I would say this week you're going to want to go with Ozil, Son, Stanislas, Silva, and then I guess potentially a Wobi if you don't have another viable forward.
Yeah, but seriously, I don't see Lucas Moura contributing very much in the league to for Spurs, except potentially as off a bench option if Spurs want to go route one.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Moving on to our next question, we have from Tottendor on Twitter. Apologies if I mispronounced that, as I'm sure I did. How would you rate these strikers? Sturridge, Walcott, Benteke, and Chicharito?
I hate myself for needing to say this, but I'd have to go Benteke. Guess Walcott, Chicharito, and then Sturridge.
Yeah, I would say for this week, Benteke, Chicharito, and Sturridge, definitely just based on matchups. Rest of the season, I like Benteke personally just because everyone hates Benteke. I believe in my big Belgian, and he's been getting real cheeky with those assists lately. I think long term, if you can trade, I would maybe try and trade two of those guys and see if you can upgrade. I don't know if that's an option. Within your league, but I'd say the two I like rest of season are probably Benteke and Sturridge. I mean, I hate to shun your boy Theo Walcott, but.
I mean, I think that he'll end up with like probably like 5 goals and 4 assists on the season, which like that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what size league you're in. If you're in a deeper league, like a 12-team league, then I would say hold on to those guys. But if you're in a 10-team league, I would maybe try and package an upgrade for a bit better forward. Next question from Sly King's Tales. Are you watching any Swansea defenders not named Mawson? Also, thoughts on Guido Carrillo from Southampton?
Well, we've discussed the Swansea stuff, at least for this week. Any of them are viable on a week-to-week basis. It's really only Mawson and Kyle Naughton. You actually already brought up Carrillo as well, that he's
Yeah,
worth a punt in 12-team leagues, but that's probably about it.
the one thing I wanted to add about Carrillo, and I mean, we have a small sample size to go off of, but obviously a forward notorious for making a living in Tonga for the peripheral stuff, Peter Crouch. Carrillo's not as big as Crouch, but if Carrillo's going to be averaging 7 aerial wins per match, and be getting a couple of shots on target, then he's definitely looking like a high-end forward three. He's someone that I wouldn't mind adding if the th forward blah, forward pool is thin, just because we're getting towards the end of the season, players are going to be fatigued, people are going to be rested, and you can never have too many forwards who see a ton of minutes.
Yep, or else you'll end up like me, where you're starting Theo Walcott and Daniel Sturridge in your league and hoping for the best.
Next question from FPL Hazardous. What is up with Everton? They fucking suck. Are you are they buy, sell, hold right now? Yannick Bolasie, Sigurdsson, and Coleman.
Drop Bolasie, hold Sigurdsson. Unless you can get proper value for him, which is forward three and above, I mean midfielder three and above, by Coleman.
Yeah, I'd have to agree on selling Bolasie. I was real hot on him before, as the majority of the FPL community was. It's just clear he's not been himself lately. Sigurdsson, I like Chuck said, it's going to be tough to sell him and get, the value you're going to want to get back for him. I mean, it's worth noting that although he hasn't been his normal Sigurdsson self, he still hasn't been horrible. He's been usable. It's just that he's kind of had matches where he's pretty much just checked out of the game.
And that for some reason or another, Big Sam sat him to start against Arsenal.
Yeah, which that was
That
confused me.
baffled me.
But among the multiple things that baffled me from Everton in that match. And then Coleman, I was one of those people who went out, and I'm a big believer in Seamus Coleman. I went out and scooped him like 2.5 weeks before he was back on the team sheet. I'm sticking with him now. If you can, I would scoop him. I mean, he had 9 points in his first appearance. He was rested against Arsenal, thank God. So I'd assume he'd get a start this week. He's someone I like just based upon talent alone. And I don't think Everton's poor defensive performance against Arsenal discourages me enough to say that he's going to be not viable once he is back in the starting 11.
Yeah, it's tough because like while a lot of that was definitely the new Everton defenders not knowing how to play with one another, it was just so bad. Like Big Sam teams usually don't do that.
Yeah, no, I mean I agree on that. I think I would say on saying is this a trend or is this an anomaly? It's probably more towards a trend than you would think it is, but at the same time I don't think they're going to be getting bashed for 4 or 5 goals every game.
There's also the fact that Coleman brings enough to the table that even if they're letting in 2 goals a game, he'll still be useful in Taga.
Yeah, I mean from successful take-ons alone and successful crosses right there, that's going to be anywhere between 6 or 7 points per game. So I would definitely buy him if possible. And then the last question from Satish on Twitter. I have Tosin. Is it time to drop him and take Wilshire, hoping he'll play in front of Iwobi? He also owns Ramsey.
Well, so drop Tosin. Wilshere is now useless because Arsenal has a real lineup and no longer needs to play him. And there's probably someone much better out there to pick up.
Yeah, the Tosin project has failed. I actually had added Jack Wilshere in a 12-team league, assuming that Aaron Ramsey would come back and immediately like break both his shins or something. But he actually scored a hat trick instead, so that's his spot to lose. And from talking to a few of my friends who are big Arsenal fans, I mean they like when Wilshere plays. And yeah, he kind of links the midfield and defense with how he carries the ball forward. But the problem is, if you have him and Xhaka out there at the same time, there's just too much space.
See,
Considering they have obviously you have Pace and Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, but they're going to press in the final third. They're not going to run all the way back and defend.
there's also the fact that when Wilshere plays, it just looks pretty watching him play. He never actually produces anything. Like his one key moment during his time filling in for Aaron Ramsey was one beautiful ball over the top for Alexis Sanchez. Other than that, he really didn't do much.
The problem with Wilshere is I just think of that the give and go goal he was involved in a couple of years ago that they scored, which is still, in my opinion, one of the nicer
Yeah,
goals
this is the
I've
issue.
seen.
People see Jack Wilshere's name and immediately reminisce to 2 years ago. He was useful then, not now.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if you're going to go out there and look for a midfielder, I mean, Wilshere's available and he's only owned in 41% of leagues. So I mean, looking at guys around him, Chuck, would you rather have Yao Mario or Jack Wilshere?
Mario, easily.
Mario's
I own
39%
Mario
owners.
in most of my Taga leagues.
Let's see, we'll do one more. Let's see who's been doing well lately. Would you rather have Yao Mario or Ryan Fraser?
Still Mario, just because Frazier's a little too goal or assist dependent for me. Like, Mario's at least gonna get some key passes in there and maybe complete a few dribbles.
And then one more. Would you rather have Mario or Stanislaus? See, that's tougher than I when I thought about it at first, because Stanislaus, there's no doubting that he's has the talent
Healthy
to be a
Stanislas is a top 25 midfielder in Taga.
he's a must own. But the problem is he gets hurt so much,
And
and
there's
then
also the fact that I still don't know what's going to happen with Mario when Lanzini comes back, because Mario and Lanzini occupy the same space. And I don't think that they're going to be able to actually work well together.
yeah, I had mentioned Mario a couple weeks ago when he came in, and then I actually re-brought him up in my column this week, pretty much saying that from the position they play and the metrics he scores in, he's should be viewed essentially as a short-term replacement for for Lanzini in fantasy. And while Lanzini obviously has a higher ceiling, it's just because the role he's playing in and what he's asked to do, that's where you get the production. But the one thing I will say is he also does get to take corners right now. So that is an added bonus.
Yeah, rest of season, I'd probably have to go Stanislas, but
Yeah, just
just right
because the.
this second, just because Mario's healthy and Stanislas could get hurt, I'd go Mario.
Yeah, I think this week I would lean.
I mean, this week I'd go Stanislas. His
Yeah.
matchup's too good to turn down.
Yeah, and I mean, unless you're a fan of really picking into the metrics like me, I mean, the one thing I did point out about Mario is that with him having taken like 75% of corners since he joined on loan, I mean, Watford are like third worst in the league in giving up goals from set pieces.
Yeah,
So
but Obiang's hurt.
but if you're looking for the potential of, okay, you have Stanislaus, he can either go supernova, he can either do the beginning or the end of a supernova where he'll either be on fire all game, or he'll do like a last week and get 2.5 points. Whereas with Mario, you're probably looking at a safe 6 to 8, in best or worst case scenario. So I guess it kind of depends upon how the rest of your midfield is set up, for how you would prefer to, I guess, go about those two.
Yeah.
I think that just about does it for this week. Anything before we get to our specific predictions, Chuck?
One sec. Now I am.
All right. Well, that does it for the Game Week 27 episode of FPL 360. Remember, I'm Sean Sullivan. You can find me at Sean_Sullivan_1 on Twitter. You can also find my weekly column, Sean Super Subs, where I break down all the free agent finds for Play Toga Leagues over at Roto-World Premier League. Chuck, where can the lovely audience find you?
And you can find me at Chuck Booth Sport, that is sport, not sports, just sport, on Twitter. And you can find everything else via Twitter.
All right, perfect. Well, best of luck. May your arrows be green, and maybe Conte will get fired.